The 13th century Persian poet Rumi opens a door for us. Come, come whoever you are. Wanderer, worshiper, lover of leaving, ours is no caravan of despair. Come, yet again come. And we come from rich heritages of liturgy and pomp. We come from burning legacies of angry gods and threats of hellfire. We come just as we are. We come with exuberant and joyful hearts, eager to witness to others. We come bereft of the goodness of life, wondering, hesitant. We come just as we are. We come in the bloom of youth, ready to explore new truths. We come ready to sit apart from our children and be nourished for an hour. You can laugh. We come with gray in our hair and experience to share. We come just as we are. We come to the place we never knew before was home. We come to the place that has been home for most of our lives. We come just as we are to join our brothers, sisters, and others as members of one family in this beloved home, our hands and hearts outstretched. Come. Yet again, come. Beloved community. Our theme for May is what I believe that Rumi, the Sufi poet, had in mind when he called all of humankind into relationship with come. Come, whoever you are. Unitarian Universalists have felt so deeply called by Rumi's words that we even set them to music, making them into a hymn that is sung as a greeting on many a Sunday morning across this country and world. This ideal for the beloved community where all are welcome has been sought for millennia, certainly within the earliest Christian communities, way before the use of the beloved community phrase was coined at the beginning of the 20th century, by the philosopher-theologian Josiah Royce. Royce was the leading American proponent of absolute idealism, the metaphysical view that all aspects of reality, including those we experience as disconnected or contradictory, are ultimately unified in the thought of a single, all-encompassing consciousness. One mind. Later in life, Royce reconceived his metaphysics as an absolute pragmatism grounded in semiotics. Semiotics is a science of meaning-making through the study of signs and sign processes, indication, designation, likeness, analogy, allegory, metaphor, symbolism, and communication. The concept that we see around us, everything, is laden with meaning if we look close enough. This view dispenses with the absolute mind of the previous idealism and instead characterizes reality as a universe of ideas or signs which occur in a process of being interpreted by the infinite community of minds, the beloved community of minds. Royce founded such a community in 1919 called the Fellowship of Reconciliation, also known as FOR, whose membership included the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. FOR began with Christians reaching across divisions of denomination and country, working to build bridges of love during the period of history dominated by the world wars of the 20th century. Their goal was to seek nonviolent reconciliation. The current mission of FOR is relatable and explains that as an interfaith organization, FOR's mission is to organize, train, and grow a diverse movement that welcomes all people of conscience to end structures of violence and war and create peace through transformative power of nonviolence. King built upon Royce's concept of the beloved community, not as a lofty, utopian goal to be confused with a rapturous image of the peaceable kingdom in which the lions and lambs coexisted in idyllic harmony. Rather, the beloved community was for him a realistic, achievable goal that could be attained by a critical mass of people committed to and trained in the philosophy and methods of nonviolence. Dr. King's beloved community is a global vision in which all people can share in the wealth of the earth. In the beloved community, poverty, hunger, and homelessness will not be tolerated because international standards of human decency will not allow it. Racism and all forms of discrimination, bigotry, and prejudice will be replaced by an all-inclusive spirit of sisterhood and brotherhood. In the beloved community, international disputes will be resolved by peaceful conflict resolution and reconciliation of adversaries instead of military power. Love and trust will triumph over fear and hatred. Peace with justice will prevail over war and military conflict. We're not quite there yet. I've been struggling with the saber rattling that has occurred on the political stage over the last year. I don't think I'm the only one. The threat of pushing the button, and whose button is bigger than another's, is annoying, to say the least. I would just like to disregard it completely. That's just pure idiocy. But these dangerous boys with their toys literally have buttons to push and are unstable enough to push them. That is why this week I watched as the leaders of North and South Korea stepped across a boundary that has existed for over six decades to discuss peace and unification. I wondered if it is possible that old disputes and suspicion of one another could resolve the conflicts that divide them. In the same right, I wondered skeptically what the real end game is for Korean politics and how it will affect global politics. I am skeptically hopeful, if that is a thing. My hope is that maybe this example of small steps made across literal boundaries could be real, and then could inspire us all to face the ancient disputes over land that exist in this world, helping us to move towards a kinder, gentler way of being. And then I think of all the resources that so many folks around the world are so desperate to get their greedy hands on, like oil or missile defense systems that North Korea would love to disassemble, I'm guessing. And I pause. I'm not naive. I just want to choose to be a hopeful Unitarian Universalist with a healthy dose of skepticism and maybe some distrust thrown in for good measure. Our Unitarian Universalist principles guide us. They remind us of the inherent worth and dignity of all people all across this world, encouraging us towards justice, equity, and compassion in our relations with one another, calling us to be accepting of one another and encouragement to spiritual growth, to seek in a free and responsible way for truth and meaning, and govern with the right of conscience and the use of the democratic process, to lead with the goal of world community with peace, liberty, and justice for all, and to respect the interdependent web of all of existence, which we are part of. Each one of us deserves these basic tenets in order to live a happy and fulfilled life. Yet greed and the desire for power taints the best of intentions. Yet the words ring in my mind, the goal of world community with peace, liberty, and justice for all. What do we need to give and give up to achieve such a goal? What can we do as members and friends of First Parish to achieve such a goal on a small scale? In many ways, to be part of the building of the beloved community. For me, it begins with a call to strive, to be a productive part, to be co-creators, if you will, of the beloved community here at First Parish, here in Sudbury and beyond, to be in right relation with one another and with the people whom we connect with out in the larger world, even those who cut us off in traffic. Nonviolence. It begins in some ways by remembering in each interaction and intersection that we are not alone. Yet, I do not know about you, but some days I do feel very alone and wary. I'm wary about my safety and my rights and the intentions of a government that is not about serving the needs of the common person. I am wary about the many for-profit corporations who have gained personhood and live only for the bottom line, having a hard time identifying which marketing rhetoric is in earnest and which is only interested in developing niche markets. I'm wary about my personal information and how it is being used and how I'm being ever manipulated by the press and the marketing machine, consciously and subconsciously. I am wary when I receive a cold call or an email tugging on my ethical heartstrings, wondering if I'm being scammed. I'm worried that I'm becoming hard-hearted because I do not trust as easily as I once did. I am concerned that I'm being taught by the media or the Russian trolls, if you will, to fear my neighbor, who may have weapons, mental illness, be a racist, or have violent tendencies. I understand what is to be gained by dividing us along various lines. It is a slippery slope to then conquering the divided. I'm wary of our world embroiled in the global game of political greed and war for monetary gain. I know that I'm one of the lucky ones in this world because I live in Massachusetts. In some ways, living in the state makes me feel safer, more insulated. I have fantasized about building a wall around Massachusetts, maybe with a door near Vermont and a door near Connecticut and a window next to New Hampshire. I lived there once. Am I alone in this wariness? Am I alone? I wonder, where is the beloved global community? Where are we all safe? Where are we called to be our best selves and asked to do the good work in the world? Where can we find like-minded people trying to do the right thing, informed by that small, still voice within? For me, it begins here at First Parish. When I enter this meeting house, I feel safe. When I look into your eyes and exchange hugs or handshakes, I feel seen and cared for, and I hope that you do as well. I feel energized and recommitted to go out there again and again this week and next week to non-violently fight the good fight. I have moments when I see what is happening in sanctuaries around this country, the violence and hate that is perpetrated out of fear of difference, fear of beliefs that call for freedom and inclusivity, the fear of one's skin color, the fear of ever-evolving politics of identity that bothers so many. I see the ways that segments of our government and fringe conservatives try to silence those who speak out in favor of the beloved community through the threat of violence, trying to intimidate anyone who would dare stand on the side of love for all. Do you feel intimidated? Do you feel afraid? I do. In some ways, I realize if I didn't feel somewhat afraid right now by the politics and the shenanigans, thanks, Mom, I love that word, of today, then clearly I'm not paying attention or willing to risk enough. I see each one of us on the front lines. We need to be on those front lines, standing on the side of love day in and day out, staring directly into the face of fear and into the face of hate, being utterly tireless as we resist fear, resist greed, resist hate, all within our own hearts. That is where the spark of the beloved community lights, in our own vulnerable hearts. This year we have played a piece of music over and over again that Ellory Park Hill helped us to make our anthem. We are all in this together. And it gets me. It touches me deeply. And this morning I ask us, are we all in? I know we're busy. I know we got things going on, but are we all in? I think of the years that I played team sports. First in high school, it was field hockey. I should be never armed with a stick. Then in college, and thank you to feminism, it was women's rugby. On the field or on the court, one was either entirely alone, running like crazy for the fear of your life, or, if one was lucky enough, on a well-honed team, we're working together as part of a whole, protected and supported, striving towards goal. As a member and friend, one has to be all in, because if someone is half-hearted, the whole endeavor will suffer. I remember some of those games where a team member would be called off the field, replaced by another player. The new energy, the needed rest, the mission was the same, but there was a revival of purpose to carry on full tilt. In many ways, First Parish is such a team. And as our anthem reminds us, we need each one of us working and playing all in, side by side and arm in arm. This morning, there's something important that I'd love for us to realize into the marrow of our bones. If a member or a friend or a visitor, for that matter, struggles and falters, our team must rally and encourage and strategize together to carry the day. When a member or friend succeeds, we all celebrate together in triumph, in love. In a world that is clearly struggling to find its way, this is nothing new. It has been the same throughout history. We have struggled, with few exceptions. Can we imagine who we want to be and what we want our legacy to be? Friends, I call us to be members, founding members of the beloved community. And this is not a new call. This is a long-standing call. Because it's not just a nice notion. In this day and time, it is an imperative. If you are not all in, and only you know this in your heart if you are or are not, I invite you to get all in. And if you don't know what that means, or you wonder, or you have concerns, talk to me. Talk to leadership. I call us to be all in because if we are not part of the solution, you know the old adage, we will be part of the problem. As a religious spiritual community at the dawning of the 21st century, we face in many ways a reality that is devoid of ethical underpinnings. The communities that say that they are the church, the place that God lives, conquers, and divides on a daily basis. That doesn't seem right to me. It has become commonplace in our society to lie, to cheat, to steal, to oppress, and take advantage of one another. The phone calls, the emails, the behavior is clear. Let me say that none of this is okay, nor should it be tolerated. We have free will in this human condition. We may not face hell, but there is evil. And there certainly is sin in this world. And believe me when I say that there needs to be repercussions at all levels for wrongdoing, there does. It's not okay to lie. It's not okay to cheat. It's not okay to steal or to treat anyone less than because of how they look, what side of the border they live on, or where their personal identity might take them. During times such as these, in a community such as First Parish, we cannot survive if we are not all in. This world needs us to bring our collective concern, principles, and ethical behavior onto the field. This is no time to sit out the game or rest on the bench. Each one of us needs to be out there in the world, calling the fouls, picking up folks and brushing them off when the unnecessary roughness gets a bit much. I know that we all do this already. Every day I know we do this. But when we feel tired, and I feel tired, we need to revive and choose to be the ones who dare to hope when we see the news about North and South Korea, even though we feel skeptical. We need to reach beyond the quagmire of cynicism and call one another and our political representatives to do their very best in representing the whole of their constituency and to be their best selves in supporting nonviolent action and solutions. Then on any given Sunday, battered and bruised, I invite you to be here. We need to enter this meeting house, take an hour to regain perspective, to receive succor and love, enabling us to become refreshed and to carry on. I could not do what I do if it wasn't for each one of you. I know that this is true for each one of the staff members and the leadership as well. Some days we just feel alone, but we're not. What I now believe is that the cure for what ails our world will not be found in politics. It will not be sorted out by someone else or patented for profit in a system based on greed. The cure will come from communities just like ours who band together with ethical intentions to watchdog and heal this world's ills. My friends, we truly do need one another to be part of this beloved community. And we truly need one another to understand, to commiserate with, and to carry on because, and I'm going to keep saying it forever, we are and need to be in this beloved community together. All together. I invite us to take a few moments in silent reflection, meditation, and prayer.